Deep Dive Cleantech. Dein Business-, Investment- und Technologietauchgang zum grüneren Wirtschaften von DWR Eco. Deinem Moderator David Wortmann. Ab geht's.
Hello, Jacqueline von den Ende.
Yes.
Yes, so this yes means I was pretty close to the pronunciation of your name. Hello, how are you doing? You're from Carbon Equity, right?
Yes, that's right. Yes, CEO of Carbon Equity.
Yeah, you're the CEO and founder. Maybe just let us know in the first, one or two sentences what you guys are doing, and then we will explore it.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, we are a pretty unique company or platform in the sense that we make it possible for almost anyone to invest in the world's best climate venture capital and private equity and infrastructure funds from 20,000 euros, which is kind of amazing. So we are not a direct VC fund or private equity fund ourselves. We're basically a digital platform similar to Moonfair or to Liquid, where we offer access to the world's best funds. And as a result, our primary offering is that together with the world's best investors, like Bill Gates, you are investing in hundreds and with one investment into up to 200 breakthrough, fast-growing climate tech companies.
Wow, that's a pretty unique approach, different than others. So maybe let's start with the funding side. You said that you could invest into your, let's say, platform vehicle as low as 20,000 euros. So a typical business angel, a smaller one, can start with you guys. Is there any upper limit?
No, the biggest ticket to date is 20 million. So let me say the average investment that people invest into carbon equity funds is around 200,000 euros. And for family offices and ultra high net worth individuals, it's 2.5 million. We now have a retail fund, which we launched a few months ago, which is also accessible in Germany, even from 20,000 euros. So that's kind of amazing and a big breakthrough. Yeah, so you should see Carbon Equity really as a digital platform, and there are different flavors. You can invest in climate tech and innovation, or you can invest in infrastructure, or you can do a combination of both.
Well, let's continue with the basics. So this is the average of 200,000. You just said high net individuals, obviously higher. Can you tell us about the number of investors you guys have? And is it in one fund, or you have like many multiple funds?
Yeah. So it's by now 1,500 investors who invested a total of approximately 330 million as of today. Yeah. So we offer three different funds. And the first fund invests in 10 of the world's best climate venture capital and private equity funds, indirectly investing into 150 to 200 climate tech companies. And if I say climate tech, I mean really innovations such as carbon-free cement, Fervil Energy, which is going to do an IPO next year. They do geothermal, Aeronis do robotics for wind farm maintenance. So all kinds of really sort of technological innovations. And then the second fund is an infrastructure fund, and that has a lower risk and lower return profile, so 8 to 12% net IRR, expected target return. But that invests in what I call build, build, build. So like, especially in Europe, that's a Europe-only fund. We just need to go as fast as we possibly can on the energy transition, which is meaning building more solar and wind, rolling out massive battery parks, strengthening our grid capacity, building demand response. So basically all of the technology that has no technology risk and where we just need to put billions of dollars to work to fund and accelerate the energy transition. That's what our infrastructure fund does. And then the retail fund, which is where you can invest from 20,000 euros, is a combination of technology and infrastructure.
Good. So you have these two funds. How big are they?
Three.
How big are they? And just to get an idea of the overall size of Carbon Equity.
Yeah, so we raised 330 million over the last 4 years, more or less.
So for all of these three funds.
Yes, correct. Yeah, for those three fund strategies. Yeah.
Good. Okay, well, now we just get the basics here. And can you tell us a bit more on what kind of companies you're investing in? You just mentioned the themes, obviously, but is it more like early stage, later stage? You mentioned a bit private equity here as well. Is there like a little bit of a private equity game going on with you guys as well? Or
yes, like the special thing about carbon equity is that it's all of the above. So when you invest in what we call our climate tech portfolio fund, you invest in 150 to 200 companies from really early stage to late stage. So maybe a couple of examples from our portfolios. So Fervo Energy is an amazing company. They do geothermal drilling. Basically, geothermal means they extract heat from the Earth's crust. And these are guys, founders, who worked in the fracking industry in oil and gas. And they were exposed there to technologies such as horizontal drilling that were used in the oil and gas industry. And now they're using that for clean geothermal energy, which is really exciting. And it makes it much cheaper to do geothermal, and therefore it is way more applicable, and that fund and that company is doing really well and is expected to IPO next year. Another example is, for example, Luxwall. And Luxwall, they make glass, and it sounds really boring, but Luxwall, they have this vacuum insulated glass. Normally with double glass, there is a little bit of air between it. And they actually vacuum seal the area between two glass panes. That makes the glass thinner, cheaper, and 40% more insulation. So it has the insulation of a brick wall, whilst being cheaper than double glass. And they use that to retrofit existing buildings. And that company just raised $51 million in their Series B. So that's an example of a company that's a little bit earlier stage. And then there are still companies that are really early stage. So for example, companies doing molten salt reactors or nuclear modular reactors, which is like all the rage in the US right now, but they can really be early still in the R&D phase and might still take 5 or 10 years to actually have a commercial product. So it's all the way from pre-seed up to pre-IPO.
And I hear a lot of deep tech, hard tech, you know, technologies. So you're less on the software side. Is this correct?
So it depends. That is true. We have, I would say, 50-60% weighting towards hardware. But for example, in Germany, we are investors. We're indirectly invested into 1.5. So that's more of a services company, which is one of the very successful companies in our portfolio. We have quite some software tooling. So AI, for example. So a very cool company that uses AI to find critical minerals. So they use geospatial data to find new lithium and cobalt areas, basically, where they can, which makes it cheaper and more efficient and also more environmentally friendly to mine critical resources for the energy transition. But another company uses AI to actually avoid using those critical minerals. So they basically say, if you want to be using lithium, well, here are all of the different material alternatives that you could use. So yeah, it's basically, it's software platforms for energy efficiency. It is AI for energy efficiency and for new material design. And it's a lot of hardware companies as well. Yeah, so basically invest in every aspect of the energy transition.
Great. I think very interesting for everybody to hear is right now how you are viewing the market. Do we experience a market slow because certain things like climate topics are not that hot anymore in terms of investor perspective? Or is it the other way around because, I don't know, Europe needs to get more resilient and we need to do a lot more investments into renewables and stuff. So what's your take on the current situation? How does it affect your funds as well?
Yeah, it is both. So first of all, there is definitely a change in market sentiment from the last 3 years to this year. And that's primarily motivated by Trump rhetoric and there just being uncertainty. Uncertainty is always difficult for investing. So what we see is a so-called flight to quality. So in the last 3-4 years, and especially if you look sort of at the boom in 2021, everything got funded, right? So direct air capture, for example, which has economics, which are really still off quite far off from being economically viable, was getting funding. So really wild things were getting funding. And now what you see is shift to quality, shift to later stage deals, shift to companies that have sound economics, shift to companies that don't need government subsidies to survive. So what is really hot is 24/7 baseload energy. So geothermal, nuclear is super hot. Solar and wind are still unstoppable because the economics are really good. Whatever Trump says, I mean, they're definitely winning. Batteries are hot because you need to store all that renewable electricity, anything demand response, making sure our energy supply is meeting energy demand is hot. What is not hot is at the moment more exotic technologies with economics that are still far off. So carbon capture is hard. Carbon-free cement, quite hard, very difficult industry, very exciting, massive impact, but it is a lot harder than it used to be. Hydrogen as a difficult business case, so it's less hot. So we're seeing some things that are hot and they're not hot. And then at the same time, we're seeing that Europe really needs to go full pool on energy transition. And really what's happening, I listened into this really cool webinar and report yesterday by Ember. I highly recommend it. They just published a 140-page market report. And it's basically about the, they call it the electro-revolution. And they're basically saying renewable electricity is cheaper than any fossil source. Renewable electricity is way more efficient because two-thirds of the fossil energy that we use and burn is wasted into heat. So we're losing $5 trillion in energy in waste every year. So it's way more efficient. And because of superior economics, the whole economy is electrifying. And that's exactly what we're seeing, right? So it started with our cars and our homes, where we're electrifying with heat pumps instead of fossils. And now it's happening in industry, where we're moving towards electric furnaces instead of, for example, industry furnaces. And so that electrical revolution, I 100% subscribe to that. And I have like no doubts that we are really replacing the fundamental basis of our energy. We're just like sort of the foundation of prosperity is our energy source. And we're swapping out fossil for electronics, for electrons. And Europe is investing very heavily in that because we are a massive importer of LNG. We have a huge dependence on the US. We have no own fossil fuels, but we do have wind. We have solar. So we need to roll out and sort of massively expand our own energy, our clean energy source to ensure resilience and less dependence on imports from the US. And secondly, Europe needs to get the cost of energy down because our industry is no longer competitive with industry in the US or China. And Germany has a huge problem with that. The Netherlands has a huge problem with that. Our electricity is simply too expensive. So more investments in renewables can drive down the cost to make sure that we have access to a stable source of energy. So like, I think on the infra side, I'm super bullish. Like, we just need to build, and we're going to build. And yeah, exotic technology will be harder. That's my market view.
Yes. So this is a very interesting take. But what's your evidence here? Are these reports you have been reading, do you actually see the pipeline of potential investments still being very up? What about the investor side? Has there been any, I don't know, slowdown maybe? What kind of effect does it have on your practical work?
Yes. So what we have seen is a bit of a slowdown in the number of investors coming into carbon equity. And that is not on the individual side. So interestingly, like private individuals, super stable, people are continuing to invest and they're basically playing the long game. And a lot of people invest with carbon equity because they want to make good money in a way that they want to have a good financial return. So our returns are between 8 to 15% or even 20% for certain funds. But and it also is really impactful to invest in these really important companies. But what we have seen is that the more institutional investors, so especially family offices, are basically sitting on their hands, and there are two problems there. First of all, is uncertainty about sort of, what is the long-term direction on energy transition and climate innovation? in the Europe, I would say we have a lot of conviction in our regulatory direction. In the US, there's more uncertainty. And secondly, what we also see as a major challenge in private equity market is that there has been no liquidity. So there have been very few exits in the past couple of years. And so everybody who's been investing in private equity basically is tied into their existing investments and cannot roll over into new investments. So we're seeing a bit of a double whammy effect. But on the other hand, we are seeing funds that are continuing to invest. There's super good deal flow. We have like amazing co-investment deal flow. So for me, it is a temporary sort of slowdown, which we expect to pick up, at least in Europe. In the US, yeah, it is less sure, and it will depend very much sort of on what the outlook is of the US midterms and the Trump presidency, where that's going. But underlying, if you take the sort of the view on what we're investing in, the whole electricity revolution is just continuing and accelerating, especially in China, emerging markets. 70% of emerging market countries is electrifying faster than the US. So really at a global scale, the US is becoming increasingly less relevant, and the rest of the world is now starting to lead that revolution.
Mm. But you would still probably primarily invest in companies which are headquartered in Europe, but maybe have an extending global business case.
Yeah, so we do both actually. So we invest quite a bit in the US, and the reason why we invest in the US in funds like Breakthrough Energy Ventures, which was the Bill Gates founded fund, for example, because and Energy Impact Partners and Voyagers and all of those are really cool funds. And the reason why we invest a lot in the US is because they're simply way better in tech, and especially in deep tech. They have deeper pockets, bigger markets, and most of our funds invest in companies that need limited financial support or limited governance support, right? So, I mean, a lot of what I mentioned earlier, solar, wind, geothermal, batteries, are all industries that will thrive regardless of Trump policies. Europe is more difficult from a tech perspective. Our earlier stage, our technology fund invests 50-60% in the US and the rest in Europe, but our infrastructure fund invests only in Europe. So that's really, yeah, we're very bullish on the economics for infrastructure, decarbonization-focused infra investments in Europe.
This really sounds almost too good to be true. You're so bullish on so many topics. So this is why I try to get more into the direction of where do you see the big barriers? And maybe there are some showstoppers, which... you could be foreseeing, or we should be all aware of.
Yeah. Now, look, I think the US, so there are, I would say, there are technologies that are over the hump and there are technologies before the hump. And what does the hump mean? It basically means favorable unit economics. Solar, wind being cheaper, batteries being at par, electric vehicles being almost at par with internal combustion engines. Those are over the hump. That's a trend that is unstoppable. But there are also a lot of technologies that are before the hump and that require, so under the Biden administration, there was obviously super favorable regulation. First of all, the Inflation Reduction Act signaled long-term commitments to investing in the green transition and US being a leader in terms of building a green industry. That's out the window. The Department of Energy used to offer double-digit million subsidies to companies, and some of our own companies have also received those type of subsidies. Those subsidies are largely out the window, and so earlier technology, and the US is really leading in terms of technology, that is going to go slower. And in some cases, perhaps even some promising technologies will get killed unless Europe manages to attract all of those scientists to Europe.
But do you think really that the US is strong in terms of technology, is more the AI and software part? But would you also say this in, let's say, very deep tech, I don't know, new solar cells, innovative materials, you know, stuff like that. Is it the US as well, or you think they're ahead of us?
Not necessarily in terms of innovation. Actually, Europe is one of the best regions in the world in terms of IP and research. So we have really good universities. We have quite a lot of researchers focused on this topic, on the energy transition and decarbonization.
Even compared to China, you would say?
China and Europe are equivalent. China really leapfrogged, right, from being a laggard to a massive innovator. And I think China is ahead of everybody. Like, we have no idea how far they went in terms of Ember, the report I was referring to. They call them the first big electro state, where they really have built the renewable electricity, basically source of their energy for their whole economy, and then electrify their industries. So China is lean, but Europe is good in terms of research. But where we lag compared to the US is rollout. It's really having the willingness to make double-digit million bets on bold technologies, the ability to continue to invest. In the US, what you also see, what we can learn from in Europe, is a closer cooperation between corporates and utilities with the VCs that are also putting in a ton of money. So the access to capital in the US is better. But there's an opportunity for Europe to catch up now, I think.
Yeah. Would you see that the US capital is coming to Europe? I mean, Europe is quite strong on the technology side, R&D side. We may have a case for an increased market upsides because of European resilience and stuff like that. But would you see that the US capital is coming for that to Europe, or would they rather try to find new topics in the US?
What I see, what we actively see, is that more U.S. funds are trying to build a presence in Europe. So we see quite a lot of U.S. funds who hired a partner in Europe, who are looking to raise capital, but also do deals in Europe. So I think if Europe plays this well, and for me, playing it well means a long-term continued commitment to the energy transition, actively investing in science, maybe creating programs for U.S. scientists to come to Europe, and then making sure that we have this super highway for tech development in Europe, right? So same rules across all European countries, one European interface for companies, so you don't have to deal with all the individual governments. So really sort of cracking down on the scaling problems that every tech company experiences in scaling in Europe. If we do that well, I think we can really use this to our advantage. And I think Europe will attract more capital and can really win in the energy transition game if we double down on it. But Europe also has its challenges. So if I highlight a couple of like the risks or the negative sides, I think solar and wind have very good economics. But for example, in Europe in the Netherlands, we have a massive grid connection queue. So we simply cannot connect more companies to the grid, and there are waiting timelines up to years, I think.
That's
up to 7
Germany,
years,
right?
In certain cases.
I mean, this is very similar.
Exactly.
Yes,
exactly. So that poses risks in terms of slowing down the energy transition. On the other hand, it creates a business case for decentralization of our energy grid. So what you see is that, for example, let's say a distribution hub or a transporter who has an army of trucks. Well, what they will do is build their own energy source, have a solar park, have their chargers, and then be able to operate separate from the grid. And I think that actually might create a use case for the whole decentralized electricity system, renewable energy source, batteries, demand response, AI software for smart planning. And I think that will also be a really big part of the energy transition. So we move from centralized to decentralized.
But you're describing the challenges downstream and the project side.
Yeah.
Your primary focus on financing startups, finding new innovative technologies and stuff. Does this really affect these bottlenecks, your investment thesis, or isn't this an opportunity as well? Because there might be some business cases, technologies out there which could circumvent some of the barriers which are in the market.
Yeah, exactly. Look, the carbon equity is quite, has a technology neutral view. The reason why you invest with carbon equity is because with a single investment, you invest in 150 to 200 companies. So we don't say, well, this is the winning carbon-free cement company, or this is the winning carbon-free cement technology. We say invest in all seven fast-growing venture-funded climate carbon-free technologies, and some will win and some will not. And so our thesis is risk mitigation. Carbon equity dramatically lowers the risk of investing in climate. Literally, the risk of doing an angel investment is that you lose your money is probably 97% plus. If you invest in a single VC fund, the risk of not making your money invested back is approximately 20%. And in our case, it goes down to 0.7% because we're basically like an ETF for climate investments in private markets. So we just diversify and invest in the direction of travel. And some companies will struggle for sure. And we see companies that are, as I mentioned, in carbon-free cement, are having a difficult time fundraising. And then we see companies like small modular reactors that are going through the roof because Google and Amazon are massive buyers of this kind of technology because they need 24/7 baseload energy. They cannot connect to the grid. They cannot develop gas reactors fast enough. So then this is a way to have clean 24/7 energy.
So with carbon equity, you're clearly focusing on decarbonizing the economy in search of technologies, companies, business models, etc. Do you still look left and side, up and down for maybe related topics like space tech? You mentioned AI and stuff like that. Is this something where you also have a view on that? And if so, which one? Or you just leave it as, you know, sub because it's just not in the center of
the focus? Yeah, so I would say AI, space tech is all part of what we see as climate technology. So it embraces mobility, built environments, industry, energy, carbon capture. And so basically it's everything. There are some companies that are incidentally like space tech. There's, for example, a company that was invested by World Fund. They are creating chips in space for the energy transition. That's a bit of a wild one. AI is infused into everything, right? Everything that is intelligent has AI components. So it's an enabler to every technology, but we're not investing in the next ChatGPT. But we could be investing in Cradle, for example, which is creating a ChatGPT for protein folding. And protein folding is essential in sort of new biomaterials, but also, for example, alternative proteins for food, right? So that could be an application. So we are currently fully focused on everything related to the energy transition and everything related to climate innovation. And the way I see that is, one, we're swapping out the whole energy base of our economy from fossil to clean. And on top of that new energy base, which is basically clean electricity, that's where you start to see all kinds of new innovations. So, for example, electrification of steel, electrification of cement kilns, battery companies, et cetera. So there's this whole new economy that is building on top of that new foundation of energy. And that's what we're investing in.
Right. Jacqueline, we are really coming to the end of your wonderful discussion here, which I could do forever, but we both have a tight schedule. Nevertheless, is there anything you would like to mention about carbon equity, about how you view the market right now? Anything you think worthwhile sharing to the audience?
Yeah, for me, look, my mantra is let's not get distracted. There is so much news and so much noise. But for me, it is so crystal clear that we're moving towards a clean energy electrified economy. I have zero doubts. And the only question is, do we move faster or slower? And that's also the biggest risk in investing. Do we move fast enough or slow enough? But the direction of travel is super clear. And for me, we're long-term investors. So it's, well, not set and forget, but almost. It's like really long-term focused investments. So I just invest in the fundamentals of what I 100% believe to be, the foundation of our economy for the future. So Yeah, less noise, more action.
This is where carbon equity is giving us the true north and the clear direction.
Yes.
So I would just call everybody to look up your webpage. I would encourage, obviously, all the new technology providers and startups to come to you to probably go through your webpage if they have an interesting case where they need funding for. On the one hand, but on the other hand, all the potential investors as well. And this is very unique, as low as 20,000 euros to be part of this game.
Yeah.
And it's really worthwhile, not just to multiply your money a little bit, but also really doing something good for the planet.
Yeah, exactly. And not a little bit. It could be quite a lot. So
let's do that.
But that's exactly. Yes. We call it good money.
Good money.
Yes, exactly.
All right. Good money, good money, good talk. Yeah. And I wish you a great day today, Jacqueline. Talk to you soon.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me.
All right. Bye-bye.
Zum Auftauchen. Wir hoffen, dir hat's gefallen. Wenn es so ist, würden wir uns sehr über eine positive Bewertung und ein Abo freuen. Und falls du noch tiefer ins Thema eintauchen möchtest oder Kontakt zu unseren GesprächspartnerInnen suchst, kannst du dich über www.dwr-eco.com ganz einfach bei uns melden. Dieser Podcast wird von DWR Eco produziert, deiner internationalen Cleantech-Beratung für Markt- und Geschäftsstrategien, Politik, PR und Kommunikation.